Good afternoon, folks. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence Show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and Free FM 89.0. And welcome to the show. If you're listening on those frequencies, or you may be streaming live or listening back to a podcast or something like that on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever. Either way, I hope you enjoy the show. And we're going to be joined pretty much straight away by our guest today, Dave Clee from Fish and Game. So I'll ring him up now and tee him up. In the meantime, here's The Great Unwashed with Nick of the Woods. That was The Clean with Nick of the Woods, and now we're joined on the line by our guest today from Fish and Game, Dave Clee. Can you hear me right, Dave?
Yeah, I can hear you. Loud and clear, mate.
Excellent. And how you be today, Dave?
Yeah, good, good. Looking forward to getting out of the office, mate, and looking at some wetlands. Just about to shoot off, and yeah, we do a lot of wetland restoration work with keen landowners, so it's the fun part of the job, mate, getting to, like, yeah, never growing up, really, so love playing with diggers and bulldozers and building wetlands, so yeah.
Right on. And where you got to go today?
So actually there's a local guy not far from Raglan who's got a bit of purchased a property, and he's got a few swampy areas and so on that he'd like to restore to wetland, as has been the case with many of I guess our agricultural landscapes in the past. We've sort of drained all our wetlands because they were viewed as a bit of a wasteland, and now people are seeing the value and putting them back in. So yeah, if we can help achieve that and maybe help get a bit of funding to, you know, do some works and plant them up and make them all look pretty, and also obviously create habitat for birds, happy days.
Yeah, well, what did I hear? Was it something like there's only 20% of the what was kind of wetlands left? Is that in the Waikato or in New Zealand or something like that?
Oh, mate, that's wishful thinking.
Oh, true.
That's less than 10% in New Zealand, and yeah, and in the Waikato, it's less than that even. And we still, I mean, the problem is we're still losing them, you know. And just if you look at all the functions that wetlands provide in terms of whether it be, you know, I mean, they're called kidneys of the landscape because they have both a polishing effect in terms of water quality, but also in terms of water storage and so on, you know. We've kind of worked under this paradigm of getting rid of water as quickly as we can, but a lot of the time that leads to downstream problems in terms of flooding and so on. If yeah, and what we're starting to recognise, and hopefully we're starting to recognise, is that if we actually create areas where water can sit within catchments, A, it'll help water quality, but it'll also mean that all that water isn't, you know, heading downstream all at once, and then we have, you know, issues with stock banks being breached and flooding occurring and so on. So, yeah, so there's a multitude of reasons why wetlands are important, not the least of which is obviously to provide our valued game birds somewhere to live and for our hunters to be able to go out and recreate and hopefully harvest a few.
Yeah, for sure. And do I remember hearing a story, a couple of native species, what is it, Kuta and Kununga, which you'll probably be familiar with. They actually draw heavy metals. They're wetland plants, and they draw heavy metals up out of the water as well. Have you heard that one?
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, a lot of wetland plants will actually act as a filtration mechanism, right? And so they'll, a lot of the time, they'll take a lot of sediment out of the water column. And, yeah, some of them can uptake heavy metals, and also, obviously, so, for example, a lot of the time, phosphorus is bound to sediment. And so if you can take the sediment out, you can reduce the amount of phosphorus in your waterways, and phosphorus is one of the nutrients which is responsible for things like algal growth and so on. So again, like, yeah, multiple benefits, I guess.
And if, I guess if folks have missed it, you know, a very sort of sad reminder of that was what's happened over at Lake Whangamarino in the Waikato. You want to tell us a bit about that one, David?
Yes, yeah, so obviously the summer, mate, we had, as everyone knows, we had a different summer, yeah, not our normal drought that we normally seem to have every year. And so what happened is we had these unseasonable rainfall events, and again, with our water all getting into this wetland all at once, and obviously the water quality as well coming in is very poor out of some of those catchments. Massive organic load coming in, and it caused parts of that wetland to go anoxic, so that's without oxygen for up to 3 months in places. And obviously when you've got no oxygen in the water, it tends to kill everything. And so we had these big fish kills, you know, tens of tons of dead fish. Now, jeez, some of those fish were obviously exotic species like koi carp. We're not too worried about getting rid of them, but there's also eels, and basically anything with gills can't live without oxygen. And then what happens is that causes a bit of a cascade of effects, because we then had a botulism outbreak, which often follows a fish kill or invertebrate kill, because it provides a protein source for the botulism bacteria to provide spores that gets uptaken by the bird life, and then bang, we have this big epizootic botulism outbreak. So yeah, mate, I got to spend a fair bit of my summer cruising around in the wetland and picking up dead and decaying birds. You got to try and remove as many as you can out of the wetland, otherwise the whole thing actually can go exponential through the carcass maggot cycle. So each maggot that a carcass holds can hold enough toxin to kill another bird.
Gee whiz.
And if you ever had chickens in your life, you know that birds are quite partial to eating the odd maggot here and there. And so then, yeah, the whole thing can sort of just accumulate into this snowball effect, if you will. So yeah, and you know, a lot of people helped out, especially all our hunters that, you know, went out there in their summertime, when I'm sure they would have been much happier going snapper fishing and picking up dead and decaying stuff. Not a fun job, and yeah, certainly a few things that when you pick up one of those 3-week-old shags, that's well and truly on the way to decomposing. It's make you lose your breakfast pretty quickly. So definitely appreciate all the help that hunters gave us, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, no, I saw the article just this morning that you alerted me to in The Guardian of all publications. And, yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, what was it, like Wairere, was it?
There was like Waikare, yeah.
Waitere, yeah. It was basically like, you know, yellow, and they called it, the locals call it the Fanta Lake, because and that's an algae bloom thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so it goes through different colorations. So it gets blue-green, cyanobacterial blooms, and then it goes through this, yeah, terracotta orange phase with a different type of algae that blooms. So, yeah, look, it's a really degraded lake. It's one of the most polluted lakes in the Southern Hemisphere. You know, and unfortunately, once our lakes collapse to that magnitude, it's really, really difficult to restore them. In fact, I'm not aware of any example where a lake that's gone, that's flipped into that kind of state, has ever been restored anywhere in the world. So, and yeah, so that, you know, that whole system there has got some huge challenges facing it, and unfortunately no quick fixes. And yeah, so, you know, I guess the other thing is, you know, we're currently working on a whole lot of different areas, but a lot of our other lakes are still declining as well. So from my perspective, ensuring that those remaining lakes that are still in good quality at the moment, making sure they don't turn into another Lake Waikato is really important, because like I say, once they do turn and flip into these algal-dominated states, we don't really know how to bring them back, you know. As you know, if you follow the media or anything really, the water quality in New Zealand, Aotearoa, is something that's a quite hot topic. And I think, you know, I guess my key message is that we all need to do better when it comes to water quality and trying to improve.
Oh, for sure. And, and I know farmers have got a big hand, or some farmers anyway, with the runoffs, right? They're coming out off nutrient runoff off farms and things like that. But I think it was Waikerie. There's a lot of human waste runs out of there too, is there not?
So, look, there's a wastewater treatment plant that discharges into the lake. We've been campaigning for a long time to get that discharge removed from that lake, and there is a process currently, a short-term consent process, which is supposed to be achieving that. Now, let's hope it's almost time for that consent to come up, and that's what we'll be holding the council to account to ensure that they do remove that treated wastewater out of that lake. And it has been operating in a non-compliant manner for some time as well. So again, like I said, we all need to improve. Having said that, the nutrient load and sediment load and even fecal coliform load coming out of that wastewater treatment plant is only a very small portion of the total catchment load coming in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's less than 5%. So for depending on which estimates you use, it's not a large portion of the total load. So again, I think, you know, the message is, well, I think we all need to improve, whether that's factories, whether it's towns and individuals, that we can make improvements in how we use and treat water, and obviously the agricultural sector, we all need to make improvements, otherwise our lakes will continue to collapse and we will continue to see issues like what's happening in Whangamurino this summer.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, but there's got to be a solution out there somewhere. I have read there's some promising research being done on having like fungal kind of sandbags. You followed that one at all?
Can't say that specific one. I mean, look, we've had all sorts of potential remedies proposed. This is sort of my background as a freshwater ecologist, and in most cases, if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is. having said that, I mean, if there are innovative solutions, by all means, but what it really comes back down to is trying to, you know, and again, I keep harping on about it, but if we could get more wetlands put in, large-scale wetlands that would help treat runoff before exiting catchments into sensitive receiving environments, those type of mitigations would be really helpful. But also just looking at, you know, critical source areas on land. There's some really good research that's come out that has shown that, for example, looking at farm systems and stocking rates and so on, and, you know, there's some innovative landowners out there that have actually lowered the overall inputs, the overall production, but they've become more profitable by doing so because they're farming more within the limits of the soil and what, you know, the natural landscape provides for them, rather than relying heavily on, you know, importing feed and external nitrogen and so on. So I think there are ways we can improve. It's not going to suit everyone all the time, but I think we need to keep looking at that, eh? And like I say, if we can make improvements across the board, and that includes everyone, then I think that's the direction we need to head.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a work together thing. It's not a stand around and like blame each other thing like people tend to do these days. But it's more like, let's get it all together, everybody, and see what we can do kind of situation. Would probably work best, wouldn't it, Dave?
Yeah, look, and I think, you know, we will have to make some sacrifices, though, you know, and that's always the hard part, eh, is when we start talking about, you know, retiring areas and restoring wetlands. I understand it, man. There's pressures, financial pressures people are under, you know. It's a difficult thing when you've got, you know, a massive mortgage that you're trying to service and you're trying to manage those competing interests. So, But in all honesty, we are going to have to, all as individuals, make some sacrifices and start putting water quality and the environment first. Otherwise, personally, all the main metrics at the moment are still, most of them aren't trending in a positive direction, when it comes to those issues. Anyway, that's some of the big picture environmental stuff.
All right. But I was just on a farm the other day when I was running around doing my census work, where there's a beautiful big lake, a guy you work with, up just south of Nike Ways. And he was saying that I think you guys helped him out, with some funding and things like that. So I guess, if you're a bloke or a person with a bit of land or something like that, and you've got a wetland there, what do you do?
Yeah, classic point in case, that one, you're talking about a boggy paddock, essentially, that, historically someone decided to stick a drain through it. It was never very productive. Might have provided a little bit of summer grazing, but that was probably offset by the fact that you lose a few cattle in it every year when they got stuck in the winter. So, those type of areas, as you saw, beautiful five, six hectare wetland now, holding a whole lot of bird life, providing a habitat for both, game birds, but also indigenous and threatened species. If there's landowners keen, all they need to do is give us a shout here at the office at Auckland Waikato Fish and Game, and we can look at how we can assist. We don't have any, we're solely licensed, power funded, right? So we don't get any external, there's a misconception that we're a government department. We do report to the minister, but we don't actually get any government funding, right? So the only way we get funding is if someone buys a trout fishing license or game bird hunting license. So not a lot of fat in our budget, but what we can do is help with funding applications. And so I've just lodged another two big funding applications with local landowners. One's a 17 hectare wetland and the other one's a 5 hectare wetland, and we're applying for in some cases up to $300,000-$400,000 to try and get those projects up and get them implemented. So that's sort of our key area, is we can look at different opportunities and funding sources we could look to tap into. And if there's people that are keen to get good outcomes environmentally on their properties, then we're keen to help out.
Hmm. And I know the council chips in for some plants and some fencing and things like that. Does anybody else generally do that? Like, does Doc chip in with this sorts of things or not really?
If it's on Doc land, Doc tend to focus on that rather than private. Council definitely come to the party. So we'll often, what we'll try and do, that's sort of what we do with these funding applications, is we'll try and connect all the relevant dots, So we'll get together, we'll look at a site, we'll say, hey, here, this is a cool project. Let's put together a 3-year plan or a 5-year plan, because a lot of these funding applications obviously take some time to get them, submit them, get the returns, and then you look at leveraging off that. So you try to see what the landowner can contribute, see what the regional council can contribute, and then you leverage off all of that to try and, boost your funding from other sources. And there's, there's 3 or 4 funds currently set up in the Waikato where, we can get some money from most of the time if it's a good project. And so there are other agencies that can come on board, and we try and connect all those people together, basically.
Yeah, all right. I was just thinking to myself just then, I interviewed Bixi, who's I think she's running the, or managing or something like that, or coordinating at least the Mangatautiri to Porongia sort of
corridor. Yep.
Corridor? Yeah, you guys involved with that one?
So we're aware of it and we've been involved in it. We don't have integral involvement. I can't claim any of the credit for that one. So, those are exactly the type of things that we can get involved in. Obviously, our main focus is obviously on wetlands, because that's where our species, our game birds and so on tend to live, and also any sort of trout fishing waters, which again is in line with our statutory functions, and providing habitat for trout and angler access and all those kind of things. So,
Just on trout, how's the populations holding up at the moment?
Yeah, we're pretty lucky, eh? We avoided the worst of the carnage, obviously, up here with flooding and so on. As you can imagine, if you get these massive big floods that come through with massive sediment loads, it can really knock the population back. Mm. My colleague Adam's been out doing some drift dives post-cyclone events, and he's generally seen pretty good numbers in most of our waterways. I think the one thing that probably threatens our trout populations most moving forward is the increasing hot temperatures that we're seeing over summer. Trout really sensitive to temperature change, and basically once you get 19 degrees or above, a lot of the waterways become unsuitable for trout. So we're seeing that a lot of them, some of our smaller rivers and so on, especially when there isn't much shade on them, they can really heat up during summer, and yeah, it really limits the amount of habitat available for trout in some of them. So yeah, another, you know, if we get another degree or two warmer than what we currently are, then that will definitely be problematic for trout, and especially the North Waikato areas like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yet again, another good reason to fence off your streams and plant some trees over them to offer a bit of shade.
Exactly.
And that,
shade trees. Look, shade can reduce water temperatures by up to 4 degrees.
Jeez.
You know, so like, yeah, that makes a massive difference to water temp. So yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, having some good overhead cover and trees makes it a bit harder to catch a fish because you can't catch your line out. But
true.
At least there's fish in there.
Yeah. I didn't think about that one, but yeah. You leave some little clear patches here and there for the old pool or two.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe leave your favourite fishing hole without big tall trees around, but yeah, plant up the rest to try and keep those temperatures down.
All right. The trout numbers are pretty good. That's good. And of course, you know, it's May pretty soon.
So
it's going to be the opening weekend for the duck season. And how's the duck numbers stacking up?
Yeah, well, we had a great spring and summer in terms of for most areas. Obviously, the Whangarei is a bit of an exception to that rule with the botulism outbreak that we had there and the mortalities that we had. But in general, look, I mean, there's still birds nesting at the moment, which is pretty crazy to say. So in New Zealand in particular, the constraint on reproduction of our birds, it tends to be more condition-focused in terms of, you know, the hen condition in particular. So if there's a lot of protein around, especially leading into the breeding season, the birds can put on a lot of lipid fat reserves, which then stimulate egg production, and the breeding season can extend out quite significantly. And, you know, birds will have up to four clutches in a season.
Right.
So that is a benefit, I guess, in dry years where it's drought-stricken, you know, leading into summer. That has a really negative consequence on those birds because there's no insect life because the swamps are all dry and the wetlands are dry and there's no puddles around.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if, I don't know, if you've had chickens and you just try and feed them maize, for example, they go off the lay pretty quickly. Mm. Same for ducks, you know, if they're just feeding on cereal crops or if they're feeding on maize or whatever, then they're not going to do too well in terms of getting all the right nutrition to, you know, produce a lot of ducklings and raise those ducklings. So, yeah, so, look, it's been good. We've got a few ducks around. Most people should find it pretty good. The only other, I guess, the disadvantage of having a lot of water around is that the birds have got lots of options. You know, you'll find little pockets of birds sort of hiding out in little nooks and crannies all over the place, especially after opening weekend, because there'll be a lot of little safe havens for them. Personally, I don't mind that. The longer I stay in this job, the more, and I realise just how susceptible ducks are to things like predation and so on, the more I start rooting for the ducks to survive and make it through, you know. I know the shooters want to get some, but if we can get more to survive, then hopefully that means a better season the following year, you know. And especially, I guess, my message to hunters out there is, if there's one thing you can do in terms of helping the duck population, is just try not to shoot the hens. If you can, you know, we've got way more drakes in our population than hens, and hens have got a lower survival rate because, as you can imagine, when you're sitting on a nest, you're highly susceptible to getting snaffled by a cat or a ferret or a stoat. So we've got a lot of males, a lot of dudes, and as you know, when it comes to a reproductive success, us guys seem to be relatively surplus to requirements, at least when there's too many. So if we take out a few more of the dudes and leave more of the hens to breed, then that'll be perfect. So, yeah.
That's very sound advice.
Yeah.
And so you know, the basics are right. You get a license right through Fish and Game.
Yeah, by license you can get them online, mate. Later in the season, you get a day license. There's also we've got this thing called Take Your Mate Hunting. So if you've never been duck shooting before, but you got some mates that go duck shooting, and you want to give it a crack, you can get yourself a license for opening weekend. It's only $5, or even $4, maybe. Sure. And you can go out with your mates and see if it's something that you might want to get into. So that's only available for those people that haven't been out before. It's a sort of first-timer sort of thing, you know, people that want to go out and give it a crack. So,
yeah,
if you're in that boat, give the office a call and we'll sort you out with a Take Your Mate Hunting license. And then, you'll get a little regulations book. Have a look. There's a few new regs that have come in this year, and particularly there's some drift shooting regulations on the Waikato River where, you know, people have built flash new subdivisions or, you know, there's a cycle trail that runs right along it now, so... Regrettably, we've had to put some restrictions in to try and prevent anyone from getting hurt or injured. You know, just getting unsafe down there, basically, to discharge firearms right next to a cycle trail. So, have a look at the regs and make sure you know what the changes are. And if you've got any questions, obviously, feel free to give the office a call and we can run you through them.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the length of the season this year, Dave?
So the main dabbling duck season runs for 4 weeks. So that's your that is for your shoveler, mallard, grey duck, and swan as well. They fall into that dabbling duck season. And then your paradise shell duck go for 2 months. So, and then you got all your upland game, your pheasants and quail and so on. That goes for 4 months.
Okay.
And pukekos as well, they go for 4 months as well. So,
I didn't realise it's really, a thing for shooting pukekos.
Yeah, no, you can shoot pukekos. They're actually not bad eating, mate. There's this old buddy wild sale that, you know, if you shoot a pukeko, you bore the pukeko next to a gumboot and then you throw the pukeko away and eat the gumboot. But if you breast out the pukeko meat and eat it, it's actually quite light coloured. It's not as gamey as duck. And I'll help you out. I've yet to cook some pukeko breast for someone who hasn't liked it. So, give it a shot, mate. And obviously, in some places, pukekos are definitely, especially in around city areas, the numbers are increasing and they're getting quite high. And they can be, if they get really high, they can be quite destructive in terms of pulling out, especially if you're doing restoration projects and so on, pulling out young plants and or they actually kill other chicks and nests as well. They're quite territorial in that regard. So, like everything, mate, they're a native bird. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to take out too many, but it's a balancing act. And, you know, we have obviously, same with paradise ducks, we have influenced their populations by changing the landscape. And paradise ducks and pukekos are probably the only two native birds that have benefited from the way that we manage our land nowadays. So, it's all about, you know, facilitating some harvest and allowing people to shoot some, but maintaining a good population.
Yeah, no, I can't remember there ever been a, you know, I'm seeing a shortage of pukekos around there. Like I say, they just seem to be more and more than anything else. But, speaking of more and more, man, like the Canadian geese thing, I know it's been kicked around like, and no one seems to be taking responsibility for, you know, because the numbers are growing exponentially, I understand. And so where's kind of that at as far as, you know, is it going to be a central government thing or a regional council or a district council thing? Is there any sort of movement in those ways?
Yeah, it's a good question, mate. I'd love to give you an answer. I mean, obviously, they were a game bird up to 2011. They were removed as a game bird at the time. I mean, there's press releases coming out saying, essentially, you know, Fish and Game weren't doing a good enough job and now we're going to manage them, and that was from the likes of Federated Farmers. To be honest, I haven't seen too much coherent management since they were removed from a game bird status. We still monitor the numbers just because we monitor them the same time as we do our swan flights, so we still count the geese as well. Last year was the first year in a while that we actually saw a little reduction in goose numbers. So I guess in lieu of any, you know, real coherent management from any of the institutions you have raised, there are some local individual landowners and so on who are taking it upon themselves, and some of them have found techniques and ways, whether it's molt culls or organising hunters, including helicopters and so on, to manage local goose problems. you know, yeah, we might not have been doing a perfect job fishing game, but I think having some form of coherent management for any species that's highly adaptable and smart is important, and I'm not seeing anything happening at the moment. Who the agency is that should be doing that, who knows? I mean, you know, I'd say we'll do it again, but to be honest, with the numbers being so high now, I don't think we'd want to take it on without some, you know, financial backing to reduce the numbers back down to more manageable levels. I sort of shake my head a bit because I don't really get what the strategy was, you know? Like, you know, you imagine if you said, TB Free New Zealand are going to stop doing possum control and we're just going to rely on individuals to do it. Can you imagine that working? You know, I can't. I mean, people are busy, man. You don't, you know. Yeah. Like,
that's it.
Shooting big numbers of geese is there are ways you can do it, but it takes time and effort and money. So I don't really get how anyone ever thought that just removing them as a game bird and leaving it up to people to sort out their own problems is ever going to be a good strategy, you know, to manage a population.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too smart, all right. And I know just even here in the harbour, right, you know, because there's so many of them, if they all go and cruise around in big gangs, right, and all the nutrient and that from, you know, when they poo in the water and things like that, and they clean out all the, you know, the seagrass and stuff as well, don't they? So it's pretty detrimental, really, you know.
Yeah, look, if the numbers get too high, again, if I look at things like nutrient inputs, all the data that we've got, even on like in lakes and so on, relatively minuscule compared to external loads from other sources.
Yeah.
You know, like even in a lake like Rotuahu down in Rotorua, which has got really high numbers of geese and swan.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like less than 2%. So,
right.
Yeah, so again, I don't think they're the main contributor, but in terms of sort of changing, and again, they're more pasture feeders as well rather than eating a lot of eelgrass and so on, but they can definitely. I've seen them browsing on zostra beds and so on. So yeah. Again, man, everything needs to be balanced, eh? And I think we've with geese, we've kind of we dropped the ball a little bit there.
Yeah, interesting. Oh well, yeah. Hopefully, someone listening takes it up, Dave. Well, whether they do, I don't know, man. But yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, the hunters, obviously, the individual hunters out there that I know that shoot 2,000-3,000 geese in a year, they do it really well. And look, that, for them, they're a valued resource, and I actually love shooting geese. I don't have much time anymore since I had a couple of kids to do all the necessary work and scouting and so on, and it's quite gear-intensive, but they can be awesome fun to shoot, you know, like if you get in the right spot with the right setup and have a, you know, day where you shoot a couple hundred geese, it's a lot of fun, and they are actually really tasty as well. That's the other thing, is you can, you know, I'll often convert them into salamis or goose pastrami is really good, and even just, yeah, plucked and eaten, roasted, really good. So, again, like the young birds, not, you don't want to be eating a 20-year-old gander. I don't think that's going to taste any good. But they can be a resource. It's just, again, we need to manage them within sustainable environmental limits, you know. Don't let them get out of hand.
Yeah. Wise words, Dave. Man, where are you going to be opening weekend?
Oh, mate, we'll be everywhere and anywhere. So, make sure you got your license. We will be out and about doing our patrols. And, you know, what I always hear from people when we get out the back of some farm at the back in the middle of nowhere and check a license or two, the one word I always hear is, never expected to see you here. So we'll keep it that way. and just, yeah, make sure you know your rules, make sure you got a license, and everything will be sweet. So that's the main take-home message, we're just out there doing our jobs. We don't want to have any trouble. We don't want to get anyone else into trouble. But in order to make that happen, just follow the rules, you know, and everything will be all good on the day.
Yeah, be safe and all that. And you're still looking for are you looking for volunteers at all to help out with that, or?
Oh, yep. Not so much. Well, I think our rangers are all pretty much fully sorted at the moment, and there's quite a process, as you can imagine, when you're, you know, dealing with him, going and talking to people with firearms in their hands and their possessions, that you need to go through a fair bit of training, before you get accredited to be able to do that. So I think we're pretty much maxed out at the moment. But look, any if there's people out there that are passionate and want to contribute in any way, shape or form, hey, you know, whether it's turning up at a planting day or doing some wetland work or whatever, yep, always keen to talk to anyone who's keen to get good outcomes. So, yeah, they can contact me.
Right on. And they do that, I guess, fishing game, email, something like that?
Yeah, or just contact the office, 07849-1666. That's the Auckland Waikato Fishing Game office.
Yeah.
If I'm not out and about in a wetland somewhere, I'll usually be here. So, yeah, give us a shout. Oh, the other thing is, tomorrow night, hunting and fishing has got a duck night on. I'll be talking at that, and there's some pretty cool prizes you can win. There's a duck calling comp, all sorts of stuff. So,
yeah,
that's the hunting and fishing down here, Waikato. So people can turn up to that.
Where's that one going to be?
Down here in Te Rapa.
Waikato
hunting and fishing, yeah.
Ah, sweet.
Yeah, they do it every year, mate, and there's some pretty cool prizes, actually, and most of the time if you turn up, you'll win yourself a spot prize of some description. And I think last year the main prize was like a $600 jacket that someone walked away with, so, yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. All right, no, well, that's good. Well, good luck with that, mate. And, we'll maybe see you around over the season, David. And thanks very much for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time, mate. We'll keep in touch about things as time goes by.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Anytime, mate.
Yeah, cheers, man. Appreciate it.
All right, cheers. All right, you have a good one.
Have a good
one.
Yeah, you too, mate. See
thanks,
you, mate.
Bye.
All right, folks, that's Dave Clee there from Fishing Game, New Zealand. Interesting chat, isn't it? And what have we got here? I think, I'm going to play you a song now. Give my voice a break. It's going to be the Allman Brothers Silver Dollar, or Midnight Rider, I should probably say. And I'll probably come back with some weather after this one.
I'm
It's the Allman Brothers there with Midnight Rider, and we'll do some weather now here on the Over the Fence show. And a southwesterly airflow lies over the country today with the cold front moving on to the South Island late last night. And first thing this morning, it continues over the North Island. And yeah, it was reasonably cool last night. The night before was, some very cold compared to what it has been. And what else is going to happen? It's partly cloudy in the west. This is the North Island. Partly cloudy in the west with a few showers. Yeah, seen a few of those today, all right. And the wind's pretty strong, all right. Southwesterly winds there. And east and north and through to the Bay of Plenty is looking drier than in the west. But a shower or two could still sneak over at times. Shower's going to clear this evening, but a few remain overnight. North of Auckland and in the west. And there's going to be showers in Wellington and the Wairarapa. And they're going to push north into Hawke's Bay and Gisborne around midday, with some pretty strong southerlies there too. They're going to be clearing as they come up from the south over the evening. There's going to be a few showers remain north of Napier overnight, and the odd shower may sneak into the Bay of Plenty. So it's going to be cold overnight for the Central Plateau down the ranges into the Wellington Wairarapa, with possible frosts even in the North Island. And if you head into the South Island, well, there's showers there down about the far south, which are going to move more coastal in Southland by the evening. And further north, showers are going to clear from the south, and a few sunny spells eventually will sneak through. Nelson's mainly dry, although they've had a good dump down Nelson and Marlborough over the last sort of few days. But there's going to be a few showers maybe down there this afternoon, and they're going to be clearing from Marlborough around midnight. There's going to be some cold winds from the southwest, and it's going to be pretty gusty around the coast. They're going to ease later today, and it's going to be cold all night. They're picking frost maybe even down south as well. All right, and so what do we got around here in the Waikato? Well, today it's going to be cloudy, and it is a few showers. Tomorrow, a bit more sun and a bit less cloud. Then Friday, Saturday, pretty cloudy, and then from Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and into next week, it's fine spells with showers pretty much. Going to be significant? Not really. Over the weekend, we might be looking at something like 15 mils or something like that. On Sunday, I think that is. Monday, that is, sorry. So, yeah, it's not heaps of rain, and temperatures are pretty solidly between 19 and 21 degrees during the day for the week. And it's going to be 6 degrees tonight, then 7, then 8. And then from there, from Saturday on, the rest of the week's going to be somewhere between 14 and 16 degrees. And the winds, yeah, they're pretty strong today. And they have been over the last couple of days. It's west-southwesterly today. That all changes tomorrow. An east-southeasterly flow moves in. Then it's going to be easterlies right through till Sunday. And then east-northeasterly again Monday. And northeasterlies Tuesday and into next week. So, yes, it all changes tomorrow. So that should not be as windy by the looks of things. The humidity today is 79%, and the sun rose at 6:57, and we'll set at 5:41 this evening. The length of visible light is 11 hours and 38 minutes. The actual day length is 10 hours and 44 minutes, and I remember last week reading out it was 11 hours exactly, so we've lost a quarter of an hour this week, and tomorrow will be 2 minutes and 8 seconds shorter than it is today. And the beautiful moon, yes, I saw it last night, hanging pretty low out over the sea to the west. It's a waxing crescent, 40% illuminated, and that will rise at 12:50, just risen, pretty much, and will set at 9:58 this evening. So there we are, there's a bit of weather for you. And I'll come back with some public service announcements, or gardening to-dos, actually, after this one by Black Belt Eagle Scout called Sedna.
One day you love me, so
All right, that's Black Belt Eagle Scout there with their song, Sidna. And now we're going to have some gardening to-dos here on the Over the Fence. And if you're gardening by the moon, it's still a good time. We've got a couple of days left of the today and tomorrow of the new moon quarter. And during this time, it's a good time to put in celery with an underplanting of watercress and feed it well. And also continue planting out your winter crops like your silver beet, broccoli and kale, things like that. And from Friday into the first quarter, of course, good time to sow green manure crops like your lupins or mustard, things like that. And what else can you plant here in the beautiful Waikato? Well, at least some apricot, beetroot, blueberries, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, calendula, carrots, cauliflower, celery, coriander, cyclamen, daffodil, daisy, delphinium, dianthus, feijoas, forget-me-nots, garlic, hyacinth, kale, leeks, lemons, lettuce, limes, mandarins, mesclun, onions, oranges, pansy, viola, parsley, peas, poppy, radish, rhubarb, rocket, silver beet, snapdragon, spinach, sweet pea, and tulip. A few things you can get on with there. And it's a good time to harvest up your pumpkins and things like that too if you haven't already. And yeah, that'll do for the gardening. And I'll come back with some public service announcements after this one by the Tokyo Police Club called Your English is Good. Police Club there with Your English is Good, and I'll just do a couple of quick little public service announcements now. And there is a Raglan Pumpkin Festival coming up, put on by Crop Swap, and there's a number of categories, and that's coming up next Sunday, March 7th. So you want to get down there about 9:30, 10 o'clock at the latest, down to the Raglan Bowling Club, and it's a gold coin donation there. You can check that out on Time Bank. I presume we'll take you through to that.
And speaking of time bank, there is a time bank coffee meetup al fresco this Friday, the 28th, coming up down at Orca. That is at 10:30. If you can get along with that and you're involved with the time bank, good time to get in there. And there's also Grows Gathering documentary tomorrow for anyone involved with that. Don't forget about that one. And the Growers Market, of course, is happening from 5 o'clock in the Stewart Street Church on a Friday as well. And as usual, the good people next door at the Whangarei Environment Centre have got the Aroha stand out there in the entrance way to the town hall today. And I had a little scratch through before and grabbed some seeds. And that's it's an excellent initiative they've got there. And it's basically you just go in and grab whatever seeds you like. And they've got little potting mix things there and little potting containers and things like that. So what you'll do is add water to those and away you go. And they are open again this week. I think I was closed a bit last week, but open there and they're running the tool library and things like that as well. So as usual, the excellent people next door got heaps of stuff on the go. And so that's pretty much going to be me for today. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks again to Dave Clee for coming in or jumping on the phone and having a chat with us. We'll go with this one called Valleys of Neptune by Jimi Hendrix. Have a great week, folks, and I may or may not be back next week. Take care. Go get there.